In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Welcome. Glad you're joining us today here on the I Spy Radio Show, where every week we help you get a little more intelligence on big government. And of course, there's no bigger government than all of the forms of Marxism, whether it's communism or socialism or any of the other forms and offshoots. It's all about government controlling you rather than the other way around. But it's more than just government control. It's about changing society itself. Socialism is creeping into our society. Make no mistake about that. There are people who want to use the government to force you into compliance with their version of the world. That means you must believe as they believe. Think like they think. Do as they say. Because otherwise you are a threat to the collective. Big government is compliance. It is not independence. It is a form of modern-day slavery. It's just that most people don't realize they're a slave. And here in the land of the free, as long as we can hold it, it's unimaginable to think that there are people who are actually enslaved. I'm talking about the scourge of human trafficking. January is National Human Trafficking Awareness Month. You know, this really is one of the most difficult to discuss topics, but we want to raise awareness of this issue. It's hard to think that this may be happening right now, right in your neighborhood, and yet it is all throughout society. In fact, it is a multi-billion dollar industry here in the United States. As hard as it is, we do want to talk about this because giving you more information on this, perhaps you could rescue someone from that life. Today, we'll be talking with the executive director of Beulah's Place in Redmond, Oregon. And then in the second half, we'll talk with Karen Cataline about how society has been lurching toward all of this and the normalization of depravity in such a way that it's designed to stop you from speaking up for what you know is right. And she'll have some insights for you on telltale signs, what to be on the lookout for, and how you can start a conversation that could save someone's life. I'd like to welcome now Andy Berger. She's the co-founder and executive director of Beulah's Place, a 501c3 created to rescue homeless and trafficked teens from the streets and give them a safe place to live. Andy, it's great to talk to you again.
Well, thank you so much, Mark. It's great to be on the show again.
Yeah, it's great to talk to you again. And you've got some news there about Beulah's Place that we'll talk about in the next segment. For now, though, I really like to talk about your book. It's available on Amazon. The book is A Fragile Thread of Hope, and the description reads, "A Fragile Thread of Hope is the story of one woman's desire to rescue four at-risk teens from the life on the streets. Each journey from homelessness or trafficking into a new life is told in first person. Interwoven with intimate flashbacks from her own life, author Andy Berger reveals how her passion for these young women stems from years of abuse she experienced as a child and young adult. The stories of these teens are riveting, their voices authentic, and their rescues poignant." And so before we can talk about your work, I think listeners need to know why you have so much passion for your work. And according to your book, the abuse started almost from birth for you. Talk to us about your mother and your relationship with her.
Sure. Well, I know it's hard for a lot of people to understand this unless they've been victimized themselves. But before there was a term called trafficking, essentially that's what happened to me from 6 months to 17 years old. Oh. My birth mother was the primary sexual predator. My birth father, brother, and extended family members, you know, over those early years especially, although it continued for quite some time. But then, as a lot of victims know, the older you get, sometimes the harder it is for intimate family members or people like that to continue in the way they were. But it was definitely a very long, evil, you know, just struggle to survive. And unfortunately, there's really nothing you can say about people who choose to do evil. I mean, God gives us free will. So we can do good, we can do evil, or we can do nothing. Those are really the choices.
Well, I think it probably shocks a lot of people not only to hear that this sort of thing happens, especially, you know, as you said, unless you're a victim yourself. It's almost hard to get your mind around it, I think, for the average person. And especially coming from your mom, a lot of times when you hear about child abuse, people tend to go, oh, what's the dad that's being abusive or some uncle or something like that. But here it's your own mom.
Right. And that's very confusing even to the child.
Yeah. Well, exactly. Because, I mean, that's the person that you would gravitate to most for love and caring and all of that. And the mom, when the mom, I mean, it's horrible when anybody does it. But when your mom that you really focus on for that sense of intimacy, that's got to be especially damaging. Your brother, Joe Jr., was also abused. So where was your dad in all of this when this was happening?
Well, he was also an abuser. And I think it just back then, you know, they didn't have places for kids to go. You didn't really even talk about child abuse. Hardly anybody did in the 60s and early 70s. You know, it was something that you just didn't bring up, or you might have that special relative that you don't talk about. Even today, I can't tell you, Mark, how many women and even some young men come up to me and just say, well, my brother did this, or my dad did this, or my mom or my aunt or whoever, you know, forced me into such and such. And families just keep those secrets, or they get in denial. In my case, there wasn't anywhere to go. So for example, one of my first definitive memories of my birth mother was when my brother and I happened to touch the wallpaper as we looked into the kitchen, because, you know, we were curious about dinner. I was probably 3 maybe at the time, and he was 4 years older. And when she saw us, she turned around. She had a meat cleaver in her hand, or a butcher knife, and she started screaming and yelling, stomping her feet, advancing towards us with this huge knife in her hand, and chased us through the house. You know, we're running, literally thinking she's going to carve us up. You know, at least that's what I was thinking. I, you know, ran to the room. I'm just a little tiny person, closed the door, and she's still screaming and yelling at us for touching her wallpaper.
Wow.
Okay. And then by the time I was 5, I mean, not just the beatings and the touching and the pounding and the verbal and the ugliness, you know, that came out of their mouths, but I wanted to just be dead. And that was my first attempt at suicide, because I felt it would be easier to be dead and at least I'd be at peace than it was to go back into that house or to be taken somewhere. And so my birth mother made it clear my days were numbered. So I thought I would beat her to the punch. You know, but God had a different plan in my life, and he interceded. And as I sat on that curb waiting for a car to be coming by fast enough to jump in front of, I looked into this huge sky. It was so blue and so vast. I just was like, wow, somebody must have made that sky. Like, how big must they be, right, to make a big sky? I'm 5. I'm thinking in terms of, you know, size. And God just spoke to my heart saying that wasn't the plan he had for me. So I kind of went back up to the garage, and I leaned against the front of the garage, and I just said, if you keep me alive, I'll do whatever you call me to do. But, you know, at 5, I didn't know what a horrible, you know, experience or journey it would be. But I knew that there was someone out there that wanted me around, and I just needed to keep moving forward. And then the last time my birth mother tried to take my life, I was 17.
Wow. Well, that notion that you say that you had at 5 years old, that there was somebody out there that was bigger than all of this, that there was some way out of this, I think that's really what I really hope, if somebody is listening to this and they are in a situation like you were, that's what they cling to, is that there really is hope. There really is somebody that is bigger than all of this that can take this away. Let's go ahead and take a break there. Coming back, we'll have more with Andy Berger of Beulah's Place. Stay with us. And welcome back. This is the I Spy Radio Show. Talking today to Andy Berger. She is co-founder and executive director of Beulah's Place, a 501c3 created to rescue homeless and trafficked teens from the streets and give them a safe place to live and some hope. She is a survivor of abuse herself. She speaks nationally and internationally to raise awareness and works tirelessly to give hope to the hopeless. Her book is A Fragile Thread of Hope. And we were talking during the break there that you are, in fact, available to speak to churches and whatnot. So we would love to connect churches. If you're out there, your pastor, or work with your church, and would love to have somebody like Andy come in and speak. She is definitely available for that. You have some news, though, on Beulah's Place. It sounds like you're growing. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely, Mark. In fact, it will be 1 year, February 4th, when we took the leap last year and just pressed in to purchase an old building. It was built in 1950s, but it's a great building. And our goal then, right now, we safe house legal teens who can sign a contract, 18, you know, 20, 21 years old. And then we help minors, but we can't house them. Well, we just felt like we needed to reach more kids because the suicide rate, especially in Oregon, is so high, like in the 13, 14, 15-year-old in that area. We wanted to make sure we could reach them. So we bought this building, and it seems like we have this new army rising up, so to speak, and they are intent on hopefully pushing our opening up sooner to possibly spring of 2020, maybe summer, but, you know, sometime in that time range, which would be amazing. And what the center will do, it's dedicated to the at-risk homeless teen. It's not just a fun center. It's not a hangout or a makeout place, but it's a pilot project. And what we will continue to do is if they are supposed to be in school, they need to be in school. If they are out of school legitimately, then they need to be working on job skills. So we're going to have this little small book and thrift store where they can learn, you know, retail and other skills on site. We'll be able to feed up to, you know, 50 to 100 kids if we had to a day. We will have mentoring, counseling, other things available that we can't do right now because we didn't have a central location for the last 11 years. So we're excited. We're just hoping.
Well, that's really exciting that you guys may be able to open sooner than later. I should mention your website is beulahsplace.org. Beulah is spelled B-E-U-L-A-H, beulahsplace.org. And we'll link that up on ispyradio.com as well. And I probably should also mention that you guys are located in Redmond. And refresh my memory, did you have a second place or is it just the one location?
It is the one location,
the one.
And we have volunteer safe houses that are not publicized for obvious reasons.
Right. Okay, that's what I'm remembering, is that there were some, like, satellite places and stuff. So,
yes.
So I'd like to get back to your book a little bit. The kids in your story, the teens that are part of the book, they're all real, all girls. Where are they today?
These gals are so amazing. They have triumphed over their adversity and over circumstances. So one is actually a commercial, has her commercial driver's license and drives a semi or a big rig for a beverage company out here in Central Oregon and is just kicking life. She's doing so great. Another gal, a three-time scholar or a Dean's List student at COCC, looking at any university she wants to go to because she gets accepted wherever she applies. She's just trying to decide. Another gal, she is an EMS dispatcher back east with a two-year-old son of her own. And the other gal that is in the book, she is in the process of buying her first house at 25 and continuing to work on her issues and is in the telecommunications market. Actually, two of those girls are working on buying their home at 24 and 25.
Well, that's exciting to hear how they've really turned their lives around, that they're being successful. Was there anything in particular that helped them turn around, or is it just this notion that you were there for them, that you gave them that hope that they could get out of that?
I think a lot of it is when they reach out to us, we're either the last hope or close to it, Mark, because these particular teens, they're not running away because they had nothing better to do or they didn't get their way at home. They're running because in their circumstance, the street looks safer than where they've come from. And once they're there, it's very hard to get back. And so they have no safe family member, guardian, anyone in their life to help them navigate survival or young adulthood. So, for example, some of our kids have had multiple suicide attempts by the time we get them, or they have had illnesses, or they just simply need stability. First of all, you know, what adult, if they don't eat for several days, or they don't shower for several days, or they don't have a way to get to school or to the job, what any of us could do in that situation? Now imagine a 17, 18, 19-year-old who has been violated, who's been beaten, who's been just, you know, maybe forced into drug use as one set of parents, well, not parents, but boyfriend, girlfriend who had a child who grew up and, you know, was drug addicted. We have all kinds of kids that come to us from all areas of Oregon, actually, not just Central Oregon. But these are the kids that have nothing. So I think our intercession and our structure is key, because we require accountability and respect, whether it's respect for themselves, for others, and accountability for each decision. Because in my life, that's what made the difference. I couldn't change what happened to me, but I could choose what I did with it or how I lived through it or past it. So we are really big on imposing choice. Do whatever you want to do, but make sure you're willing to take the consequence and own the action for it.
Well, I think that's good advice for anybody, but especially for teens. Talk to us about the fateful Thanksgiving Day in 2008 that really set you on this path.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. That was about 6 weeks after I'd had a major traumatic brain injury, and my whole life was kind of upside down, and I wondered what I would do since I couldn't work the way I used to as a corporate trainer. And so on that particular day, Ed and I, my husband, were serving meals to homeless at the senior center, and these young women came in, maybe 17, barely 18, and they had babies, newborns, and they were living in their cars. And I thought, that's just wrong. How can we allow that as a society to happen? No matter how they got into the situation or what happened, we still need to help these kids. And so Ed and I worked out, well, do we feed them? Do we rent a warehouse and feed them? Well, after you feed them, then what? You know, okay, well, if we set up a short-term shelter, okay, well, then what happens? How do we get to the root, and how do we help them move forward? And so that's how Beulah's Place kind of evolved. And we put a website up a few months later in faith and just kind of expected the community, hopefully, to accept it. And what I found was it was very hard for people to accept that there's trafficking, that there are predators out there. And this was 11 years ago. So I would start with my story, and I would say, look, we have the chance to stop this, or to at least be the community that says not here.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth is, every community, whether we acknowledge or not, has trafficking.
Yes, unfortunately, that is very true. January is National Human Trafficking Month. There's going to be a big event at the White House that Ivanka Trump is hosting. Will be attended by both A.G. Barr and also the president himself. We'll be talking about that when we come back. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking with Andy Berger. She's co-founder and executive director of Beulah's Place, a 501c3 created to rescue homeless and trafficked teens from the streets and give them a safe place to live. January is National Human Trafficking Month. We're trying to help raise some awareness of this here on iSpy Radio Show. I should also mention that Andy is a national speaker. She's more than happy to come speak to your church or organization about this issue. And then also, you were saying during the break that the sales of your book, A Fragile Thread of Hope, some of the proceeds go to help kids.
Yes, 45% of the net proceeds go to victims of child abuse and trafficking, like the girls in my book, Beulah's Place, other organizations that help us help others who can't help themselves. So, for example, you know, for people that like numbers, 1,000 books sold helps us shelter 4 to 5 teens a year, possibly, you know, depending on the circumstances with that team, and get them through our program. And being all volunteers, we have a 92% success rate, Mark, of these kids after they graduate our program, becoming independent and being able to stay independent with very minimal assistance.
Wow, that is shocking. You said 92%.
Yes.
Wow.
Currently, that's what our success rate is. And that's just from a lot of hard work and great people out there.
That is terrific. Absolutely terrific. So as we said, January is National Human Trafficking Month. There will be a summit at the end of the month to mark 20 years since Congress made it a federal crime. President Trump is planning to attend, along with A.G. Barr, members of Congress, state and local leaders. What does it mean to you personally and to the larger movement to expose this that you've been involved in? What does it mean to have that level of exposure where the president himself is attending and hosting this kind of summit?
I think it is phenomenal, to be honest. Since I've been a voter, which has been a really long time, I have never seen an administration this proactive, this dedicated, and especially, as you just said, for the president himself to be involved. And I think it's terrific because, believe it or not, even in some high-ranking law enforcement agencies, there still isn't belief that this is a problem. So for AG Barr to be there and Congress people, I know in Oregon, I am so grateful to Congressman Greg Walden because he actually showed up, you know, November 14th when I was in D.C. speaking on Capitol Hill. We had about 200 attendees with organizations from both sides of the border saying we need to work together as a collective voice against these predators. And so to have that summit, God bless them. I am so grateful and so thankful that we're getting that traction from the very top level of this country's leadership.
Well, like you said, you've never seen this level of involvement by an administration to really start tackling human trafficking. And I remember seeing a statistic not too long ago that President Trump's administration arrested more human traffickers in 1 month than his predecessor did in all of 2014. Why do you think human trafficking was being overlooked and really didn't used to get the attention that it does now get and that it needs to get?
I think it's a big question, but part of it is just the same way families keep secrets about incest or abuse in their home, higher power, higher influences, and of course the money is a great seducer for people to keep their mouths shut, to not have the courage to come forward. Somebody always knows, Mark, when a child is being abused, when someone is being abducted or trafficked. It's whether we can catch them or whether somebody has the courage and morals to step up and say, that's wrong, I don't want to do this, no matter how much money. But the Epstein case and others like that show the depravity has no gender, has no level of influence. You know, it is across the board. It's just a matter of how many people choose to be involved with something that illicit and that depraved.
Well, I think it's a real shock to the system when you hear that this sort of thing happened. But, you know, as you mentioned with the Epstein case, but there are plenty of cases, high profile cases, where it is clear that this sort of thing isn't happening. There's a guy, I forget his first name, but last name is Nader, and he was a bundler for Hillary Clinton, and he was also trying to be as an intermediary from some of these Russian banks, and he's been arrested for child porn, but also for trafficking a young child from, I think it was Romania, to come here to the U.S. I mean, this is somebody at one of the higher levels of government that is doing this sort of thing. I think that really has to come as a shock. You mentioned that law enforcement agencies sometimes are, it's almost like they don't want to hear this. Are they beginning to wake up to this, though?
I believe they are. I believe I had the opportunity to speak to our National Academy in Quantico last fall, and I believe that there are a lot of great law enforcement people that either don't get the opportunity to know who these kids are or what's really happening, or they're just told, you just have to do this. And so many came up to me and said, we had no idea until we heard your story, until we heard what you're doing. Mm. You know, we don't really get to see this. I think there's so many people that want to help, but the money influences, it's easier to traffic a human than it is to sell and distribute drugs, because there's a lot more ways to get caught doing that than there is to, hey, come to a party, right? You're talking to your girlfriend or boyfriend, you take them to a party, and then you sell them to your friends that night. Wow. Who's going to come forward? And on the higher level, no one's going to admit to being involved in something that dirty. It's just not going to be tabletop conversation. But like any other home, whether you make billions of dollars or you make no dollars, there are still secrets that people are willing to sacrifice integrity and morals for to keep.
Well, while the Trump administration is raising awareness of this, you've got some national publications in the mainstream media, such as Salon.com. They're a national media organization. They've actually published articles trying to normalize pedophilia. What's your take on such things?
It is appalling. If ever there was a revival or a revolt in this country, it should be against that. It should be against using children as products, as chattel, you know, as it's barbaric. And I'm sorry to be so strong, but that's really what it is. There should be an outrage. Every church, regardless of denomination or belief, should be standing up and demanding, you know, more from their local leadership, from their state leadership. This should not be allowed. It was earlier last year, I believe, where the USA Today reported the Rutherford Institute said, in America, Americans buy children for sexual activity 2.5 million times, and those are just the times that can be actually calculated. So there's something deeply, deeply wrong in society right now.
Yeah, there sure is. I would attribute it to a true spiritual problem for sure. I just can't imagine doing that to kids as an adult. I just am horrified to think that adults do this sort of thing. Unfortunately, we are up against the clock. We would love to talk to you again sometime in the near future. Good luck as you get ready to open that new organization, and let's hope that it's ahead of schedule as planned. Andy Berger is her name. The website, again, beulahsplace.org. We'll link all of that up on iSpyRadio.com. Her book, A Fragile Thread of Hope. Andy, great to talk to you.
Thank you. Same here, and thanks to all your listeners. I appreciate it.
And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. This month is National Human Trafficking Month. And despite sounding horrific and rather unbelievable, it really is real, and it really is a genuine problem. There have been thousands of these kinds of arrests in the last couple of years, so hats off to the Trump administration for raising both awareness and also doing those hard arrests. We just got done talking with Andy Berger. She is the executive director of Beulah's Place, a home for trafficked teens from the streets. Her terrific book is A Fragile Thread of Hope, and I'd like to make sure that you go ahead and order that, because some of the proceeds from that goes directly to helping children. I'd like to welcome now Karen Cataline. She is a commentator and columnist and also a talk show radio host. She holds a master's degree from Columbia University and is a frequent guest on AM Talk Radio. She's also the producer and host of Spouting Off, a live internet call-in talk show covering politics, pop culture, and social psychology. Karen, it's great to talk to you again.
Good to be with you, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely. So if people wanted to listen to Spouting Off, how would they go about doing that?
Well, first of all, it's 11 to 12 Mountain Time, which would be 1 p.m. Eastern every Tuesday. It's an hour. It's live call-in talk radio on the internet. And all you got to do is go to my website, KarenCataline.com. If you know how to spell my name, you can find me all over the place, Twitter, Facebook. Pretty much the only social media I really care to do, and that's a lot. You can find all kinds of ways to argue with me or agree, whatever you like. Karen spelled the normal way, K-A-R-E-N. Cataline spelled K-A-T-A-L-I-N-E.com. All you got to do is click on the show picture at Showtime. That'll take you to a page in which you push a button and you get to hear me live. And then there's a whole archived bunch of podcasts. I think I'm almost ready to hit the 100 show mark.
Wow,
for
great
Spouting
for
Off. How do you like that?
Yeah,
I never
that's really
thought,
cool.
But there you go.
Yeah, sure. And
right?
You know, if people miss that, we'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com as well. Just look for this week's show page. You've got a really interesting article on your webpage. It's titled "The Culture War That Threatens to Upend America." And this really fits very neatly with our topic today. And in your opening paragraph, you write, quote, that what is good and decent in America is being regularly attacked and systematically eradicated, while the very worst impulses of human behavior are being encouraged and even elevated. And you know, it's really interesting because this ties so neatly in with our last guest. I had mentioned that Salon.com and some other mainstream media, they publish articles trying to normalize pedophilia and some other behaviors. How did we get to this point in society that abusing children is somehow normal or ought to be?
It's an extraordinarily good question. And many everyday average people look at what's going on in the country and they're horrified that life seems upside down. That's why Donald Trump's presence is, number one, such a threat to these people, and also why he offers and presents such hope to me that people will stand up and remember what freedom was. The reason that I think this country is under attack from within is because it's straight out of the socialist playbook, unfortunately. I mean, people died, American citizens, great Americans died in order to prevent the spread of socialism even around the world, the tyranny, the genocide caused by socialism. But what I really want to get into is the textbook. There's really nothing new under the sun. Everything America was built upon, everything America stands for, is the antithesis of socialism.
Yes.
It was created to prevent socialism. That is the elevation of individual free will and personal responsibility, the limited nature of government that elevates the individual, allows the individual to make his own choices and take the consequences. I've made up a phrase you're welcome to use. Just give me a little bit of credit for it, because I say it all the time. God himself gave him, whatever you conceive God to be, gave us free will. We should never expect less from our government. Truly, it is socialists who are trying to be God, not only in their universe, but in ours. And so all of the Bill of Rights are a threat to socialists. Bill of Rights are under attack today, including free expression, free speech, our ability to defend ourselves if we are law-abiding citizens, and on and on. You were going to say, sorry.
That's fine. I was just going to say that not only are they trying to be God, but they're trying to be, I guess, the taskmaster, because they somehow see it as their right and duty to tell everybody else what to do.
Yeah, I'm appalled by every single one of the Democrats running for president. I don't think any of them are moderates. They're going to try to claim they are.
Yeah,
but
I
among
agree.
The most egregious, the one that I have loathed more than any other, and I've been writing about him for years. I wrote about him when I published my book, Fat Lash, Food Police and the Fear of Thin, and that is Michael Bloomberg, a truly unimpressive man in many respects. He's running millions upon millions of dollars in commercials in the most expensive. You're going to see his commercials, I'll bet you, during the Super Bowl. There were so darn many commercials last weekend, and I'm not a huge football fan, but there were so darn many Bloomberg commercials during the Big Four NFL games that I was watching with my husband. But the one that drove me the craziest was that we should, here's this great Michael Bloomberg, and he's better than Donald Trump, right? Because he's a New York billionaire socialist, where Donald Trump is not. I'm editorializing. But the big thing is that he's independent, right? He wants us to look at him as a fabulous candidate and a great guy, because he's so independent. And I'm screaming at the TV, this is a man, right, who doesn't think his fellow American citizens are entitled to independence, to make choices as to what size soda they should drink, whether they should use baby formula or earbuds, and certainly the Second Amendment, for which he has spent millions of dollars in cities he doesn't live in or pay taxes in, but he wants to buy off legislatures all over this country to repeal, and I mean it, repeal the Second Amendment to make people less safe in their own homes and out in the world. And this is a man who wants us to think he's a great guy because he's independent.
Yeah,
Isn't that rich?
Yeah, well, that's the benefit of having $200 million of ad buys, is you can try to recast yourself from reality. All right, let's go ahead and take a break there. Come back, we'll have more with Karen Cataline, continuing this discussion of the culture war and how that is feeding right into human trafficking. It is Human Trafficking Month. Everyone stay with us. We'll be back on iSpy Radio. Back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. It is National Human Trafficking Month, trying to raise awareness about that. We're talking today to Karen Cataline. She is a commentator and columnist. She also has her own radio show, I should say, Spouting Off. It's a live internet call-in talk show covering politics, pop culture, and social psychology. Yeah, covering up politics, that's how you know that you're on the left side of the spectrum rather than on the right. So, Karen, we're talking about one of your great articles that you've got up on KarenCataline.com. It is called The Culture War That Threatens to Upend America. And just to kind of continue along those lines there, because I really think that your article really kind of reinforces why human trafficking happens, is because it almost becomes normalized in some ways. And, you know, getting back into socialism, that it's okay to basically abuse somebody else because, you know, people are cattle, essentially. But there's this one thing that you raise in the article that I think is so important, is because it's almost, I'll just read this from here. It said, a socially unacceptable point of view isn't just maligned. The person who dares to utter it stands to lose his job, his reputation, and quite possibly his livelihood. In fact, freedom of speech itself is in grave danger, as in some quarters, it has already been diminished to a whisper. And I think that's such an important point because, and such a real danger to society, because we used to enjoy hearing different viewpoints, but now if you dare to disagree with the mob, you are literally assaulted, whether it's physically assaulted or certainly on Twitter and other places, you will just get reamed out over social media.
Yeah, and it's, I think, very important to mention that there is no moral equivalence here. You know, there's a lot of people who don't pay a lot of attention, who think, well, they all do it. No, I'm not a Christian. I happen to be proudly Jewish. Christian conservatives are infinitely more tolerant of differences of opinion than any leftist whose leftism is their religion.
Yes.
It is stunning to me that it pretty much is, except for a very, very, very rare few, this kind of censorship is coming from exclusively the left. The left that used to say, if it feels good, do it, be yourself, express your opinions. They've totally corrupted Hollywood or they used to, you know, to take away the civility in America that it did offend the senses of Christians and traditionalists. And now suddenly, almost within a blink of an eye, the left has become the new Puritans, the new tyrants, the new censors. It's so amazing to me to watch and to even look at that I've lived to see this moment in history. Lenny Bruce would be put in jail today by the same leftists that cheered him in the mid to late 50s for bucking the system on what was considered obscene, right? At the end of his life, he was a drug addict, and I remember this story. It's a little before my time, thank God, or whatever. He was obsessed with trying to tweak people who said, oh, you can't say that. And now this is exactly what they're doing, which goes to what I said before the break. And that is, there is a textbook in socialism. There's nothing new under the sun. And part of it is to have one another at each other's throats, to create chaos and in preparation for screaming to the government to create order. So that gives them an opportunity there. But furthermore, what's really scary is things like the red flag bill, which in Colorado are, and Oregon, I'm sure, there's 17 states now, which under the guise of, we want to help you, we want to take guns away from the mentally ill or people who are in danger of themselves or others. January 1st was the first day of the red flag bill in Colorado that went into effect. Don't know about Oregon.
Oregon,
and,
one, yeah. We actually led the nation in that, I think.
It's stunning. It is outrageous. And it is written, and each of these are slightly different, again, with lots of the money from Michael Bloomberg. And it creates and sets up a new culture, a new cultural premise that we should be snitches on one another, and that the government will allow us to become vindictive and get back at our political enemies and people we don't like, maybe an ex-husband, an ex-wife, by sicking the government on them and having police turn into brown shirts.
Right.
I never thought
I'd see it. Yeah, and I don't think with any of those red flag laws there is any responsibility if you lie to law enforcement in order to get somebody's guns confiscated, and it turns out there's nothing wrong with the person, there's no mental issues, there's no sense that he's going to go suddenly and do this mass shooting. I don't think there's anything at all about that. You know, in terms of getting back to socialism, I think that is slightly new, what they are doing, in the sense that now they are really using the weight of the law to enforce their view on everybody else. You mentioned the red flag laws, but even within your article there, you mentioned that within the city and state of New York, you can be fined up to $250,000 simply for using the unpreferred pronoun of somebody, whether it's your employee or whatnot. It is absolutely astonishing to think that you are now fined if you unintentionally use the wrong pronoun for people. I mean,
No. You should intentionally use them. We should intentionally use them. We have to overwhelm these people to get this to the Supreme Court. Hope to God we have an originalist Supreme Court, or the country is pretty much done anyway. But this is patently and blatantly, I just made that up, unconstitutional.
Yeah,
the government cannot fine you.
I just
or punish you for what you say.
Yeah, I just honestly cannot see how that would stand any kind of jurisprudence on that. But you know, the thing is, 10 years ago, we would have said, "Oh, that'll
Democrats
be totally,
will vote for it."
The Democrats certainly sure. But I mean, 10 years ago, you'd
say,
"That will be totally thrown out in court." But you know, nowadays, I'm not so sure, because gender confused people are being framed as a protected class. So. All right, Ted, let's go and take a break, and we'll wrap things up with Karen Cataline after this. And welcome back into our final segment now here on the iSpy Radio Show. Talking today to Karen Cataline. She is a commentator and columnist and has her own talk show host, which you can find at KarenCataline.com. We'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com. And so, Karen, we haven't even really tapped into your master's degree that you've got from Columbia University here in MSW. And it is National Human Trafficking Month, trying to raise awareness about that. And so one of the things that I'd like to ask you, if you could put your MSW hat back on, is there some means to tell? I mean, what should people do, I guess, if they think someone is being abused or trafficked? I mean, are there telltale signs or something they should be looking for?
There can be. I've done a lot of work with people that have been sexually abused in childhood or at any time. And one of them is a drastic change in personality.
Hmm.
Somebody who was cheerful at one point, or they were good in school, and you see them, there are drastic changes. If the person says, if this is happening in school, or, I mean, sexual abuse, if they say they don't want to go to school anymore and this is out of character for them, anything that's out of the ordinary behavior is certainly something to start asking about. And it's, you know, it's okay. You want to be careful in the way that you ask it, but you want to ask direct questions. If you're afraid to talk about it, you'll telegraph to the person that they should be ashamed.
Hmm.
And it's very important for people who are interested and who are concerned about kids, young adults, to know that, to remind them, especially once you know that they have horribly been abused in this way or in any way, sexually abused, that it is not their fault. It is the perpetrator's fault, and that you will stand by them, because they almost always think it's their fault. There's a lot of depression and self-hatred and self-anger. Kids cut themselves, and that is a telltale sign. Losing control of your bowels or urine, believe it or not, it can be. There's a large number of symptoms, but mostly if you notice anything that is really strange or out of the ordinary, talk to your kid, you know, and talk to them. Don't accuse them, of course, but talk to them and get them, if you can, to open up and try to normalize the conversation as best you can. There's a lot more. I encourage people to read up on this. It is a profoundly serious subject, especially now with human trafficking. Very devastating developmentally to people at any age, but especially children.
Well, in terms of human trafficking, this happens from very young kids. Our previous guest said that it began happening with her as young as 6 months of age. I mean, that's just horrific. But absolutely horrific. But it seems to be focusing a lot on older children, meaning like 12 and on up through teen years. What stops, it can happen to adults as well. What stops people from reaching out? I mean, I can understand if it's a family situation where you're being abused, but if you're kidnapped, what stops people from saying, hey, I've been kidnapped?
Well, fear, certainly. Shame. There's something we call learned helplessness. You know, perpetrators are usually very manipulative, sometimes threatening, sometimes bullying. Often a perpetrator will tell a young child, you cannot tell your parents or I'm going to hurt them or something. I mean, there's an enormous amount of emotional and psychological abuse that goes on with it. But also there's I mentioned before, it's common for kids to believe it's something they did or it's their fault. Why? Because there's a sense of control when you can blame yourself. If you blame someone else, you feel more helpless. If you blame yourself, then you feel like there's something you could do or could have done. And that's what comes up in therapy sometimes often 20, 30, 40 years later, sadly.
So I'm
glad you're bringing attention to this subject.
Yes, it is a very hard subject to talk about for sure, and our heart goes out to people that are in these kinds of situations. There is help out there. We'll have some links up on iSpyRadio.com, and we'll also be linking up Karen's website there as well, KarenCataline.com, and also her show, Spouting Off. Karen, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure. Thank you so much. It was a very interesting conversation. It was my honor.
Before we go, a reminder, our first guest, Andy Berger's book, is A Fragile Thread of Hope. 45% of the proceeds from that goes directly to help rescue teens. And if you suspect someone you know may be in danger, perhaps being trafficked or just being abused, we'll have some helpful links on today's show page as well. You can also always re-listen to today's show in case you missed something, like Karen's great advice on what to look for. Sometimes all it takes is a single question to save someone's life. Be bold, because remember, they're scared. As we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.